Okay. Very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 15th of March, 2019, our first day of the annual 9-day retreat at Cameron Highland Sampo Temple. So we will commence our meditation session as from now. Before I really start the official puja and the chanting, I would like to maybe distribute some of the program, retreat program. Then what about Richard and Danny, your books? You can have them. Come, I give to you. This is the full set for both of you. Then this one is the program. Where is your program? Oh, down here. So you have a full set of that program. Anybody who still don't have the books, the Heart Sutta, the Bodhisattva Way, then there is this new book, The Heart and the Mind. We just printed, I think, 2 days ago, or yesterday, Padmasri received it. You should have a copy. If you want more, you can collect from the back. Then there are some earlier books that you all may have not received them. They are also there. Then there is a new version of the chanting book. This small book, we have incorporated the Silena Sukanti Yanti to explain the precept more clearly. So you can have this copy, then you no need to carry the retreat version, which is more thick or heavier. So this one you will use it for our normal chanting first. Then later on, when you need to refer to some of the reflection and chanting in the retreat chanting book, then only we will use it. Anybody need the meditation retreat program? I still have quite a number of copies here. The Heart Sutta and the Bodhisattva Way, Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way, this blue book. Retreat program, take from there. So this is Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way. This one we will do later. But the first one that we will do is the Heart Sutta. This one is very comprehensive. This one was shared over a period of 15 over months, I think. Then we compiled a short note and it has become a book which is very complete, very comprehensive. So it will help you. Okay, anybody else need anything? If not, then we can start. We can start out with the chanting. Did we prepare the... Okay, we can get the organizer to come and light the candle and the incense. Come, quickly. Padmasri, Bertil, Sui An, Chin Hao. Four of you. Ratio, Padmasri, Chin Hao, and Sui An, come, four of you. Light the candle and the incense. Then we have a simple puja. Then the rest can stand up, form a circle. Oh, this year they have a Stall Bodhisattva. Oh, new one. Very nice. Tizang Wang, first one. Wow. Alicia, where are you? Wow. 这个真的漂亮。很庄严。Okay, let us start. Jin Hao, come. you offer the tree first. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. The fruits you bring over. Do not here. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. What about this flower? Sadhu. Oh, that flower. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. You pass the chinhao, chinhao can put them. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, thank you. You all can be seated. Then we will commence the puja chanting. You can use the new book. So today maybe I just administer you all the 5 precepts. Anybody take 8 precepts? You want to start tomorrow or today? Tomorrow, tomorrow 8 precepts, today 5 precepts. We will do our usual chanting first. Let us do our salutation. Prepare our mind, develop the faith, saddha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence our salutation. Namo Virochana Buddha. Namo Virochana Buddha. Namo Virochana Buddha. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Chunti Pusa. Namo Chunti Pusa. Namo Chunti Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa. Namo Dijang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang sama sambuto bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you can turn to your chanting book, page 1. We will chant from the Vandana onward. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Dhatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dhatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dhatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinadana ramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. So now I will read to you the significance of all these five precepts. I will chant the Pali first. Imani pancha sikha padani silena sugantiyanti silena bhogasampadan silena nibuntiyanti tasma silang visode. Wait, before that I explain first, then you will rejoice later. These are the five precepts. Virtue is a source of spiritual happiness. Virtue is a source of spiritual true wealth. And virtue is a source of spiritual peacefulness. Therefore, let virtue be purified. That's the reason why you have to keep the precept. Because if you don't keep the precept, you will not have these three qualities to make your mind different. These are the supreme quality of mind that can develop the meditation, especially the spiritual happiness, the spiritual peacefulness, and spiritual wealth that comes along with keeping precept. It's also one of the meritorious action, 10 meritorious action. Then we will chant that one. I undertake these 5 precepts 3 times, then after that you rejoice. Imani pancha sikkhapadani samadhiyami. Imani pancasika padani samadhiyami. Imani pancasika padani samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This response, you all supposed to respond, rejoice. Because it's to remind you on the importance of precepts, the significance of precepts. Okay, now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena dopenahang suganghina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana motamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami munindas siri pada sarorohe pujemi butang kusumena nena punnena mattayena ca hotu mokam pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tatayati vinasabhavam adivasetu nobante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now we will chant our puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of all karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flower. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana. Making of oral aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculty of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or power, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we will now turn to page 6. I will do the invocation to the devas. We do it together. I will explain first. In this universe, in their entirety, let the devas and deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the king of sage, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkadam dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta namo atassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo atassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo atassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa itti peso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati svakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehi pasiko opanayiko pacyatam veditatbo vinohiti supatipanno bhagavato savakasango ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango nyaya patipanno bhagavato savakasango samichi patipanno bhagavato savakasango yadidang chatari purisa yukani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato savakasango ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anutarang punyaketang lokasati sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Triple Gem. Bhutang pujami Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, you can be seated. Now you turn to your program sheet. I will go through the program sheet with you all. Then from there, you all can develop the better understanding of why you are here. Your main purpose and intent of coming to this retreat. For those who are new, I have to introduce some very basic thing to you. This is the main meditation hall. Most of our activity are done here. The meditation, the Dhamma sharing, the Q&A, the puja, and whatever spiritual activity we will do it here. Then for you, you need to know where the toilet facilities are. The toilet facilities are, the ladies' toilet is on my right, which is your left. Then the man is on my left, which is your right. Okay? So you need to go to the toilet or the washroom, you can go, excuse yourself. Then if you want to have your hot water or whatever, cold water, I think there are two, one here and one on the right and one on the left. But the hot water, try not to get it from here. Hot water, you use your own tumbler or whatever container you have. You can get it from the kitchen there. That one will last you longer because the capacity is big. Here, every time somebody has to carry that I don't know how many gallon, that plastic bottle, big floor to replace. That one is very heavy. So to relieve them from having to carry so often, maybe the hot water, we make it a point to get from downstairs. Then they only take the cold water from here. Then since you are down there are cold water side by side with the hot water. But if you are elderly, you find that you are not so mobile, then maybe you can take from upstairs. Don't worry, because you don't consume that much. Then if you need to have soft drink or what, the kitchen down there is, I think, open until certain time only. Most of the time after our class, it will still be open for another hour or what, but I think we have to leave that place latest by 10 o'clock or 10:30 latest. Then keep your voice down. When you are here at the retreat, you're supposed to develop your discipline to be mindful, to be aware, to develop the meditative understanding, then preferably noble silence, talk softly, or use hand sign, and try not to talk. And at night, sometimes some Kayanamitta, they are so excited, they discuss among themselves very loud, until neighbor also can hear you. So try to keep your voice down, or you need to discuss something, go to some more quiet place or remote place and discuss it softly. We need to have respect for this way place. We are already full of gratitude towards the temple management for letting us use this wonderful way place for our retreat, our annual 9 days retreat for so many years already. If I'm not wrong, this year is our 7th year, I was told. So now I will read to you our program. Meditation retreat at Mahayana Triple Gem Temple, Brinchang, Cameron Highland. So it's a 9-day retreat starting from today, 15th of March, Friday, until 23rd of March, Saturday. Oh, sorry, it should be 2019. Yeah? The title didn't change. Huh? Yeah, never mind, you make a note. Yeah? Should be 2019. Sorry about that. Then there is an introduction. This meditation retreat cater for all participants who may be from different background or Buddhist tradition with varying meditation experiences. The emphasis here is on the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma and the meditation as taught by the Buddha, instead of focusing on methods and techniques of meditation. This program was prepared to allow participants to settle down slowly into the retreat proper via a less stringent first session where more Dhamma understanding will be emphasized, followed by a more stringent second session, means 19th of March onward until the 23rd of March 2019, where noble silence, heedfulness, and the meditative training and actual cultivation will be emphasized. So make a note. Eh? Then the main purpose and intent is as follows. Eh? There are six important points. First is to understand and realize the noble teaching of Lord Buddha. We are sincerely cultivating the much needed heedfulness or appamada, as emphasized by the Buddha via his Dhammapada verse 183, 21, 22, and 23. And his final advice, appamadena sampadeta, means strive on with heedfulness before his parinibbana. To train ourselves during the meditation retreat to develop a very stable daily mindfulness, the silent mind, with inner awareness. This is most important. You have to train until very stable, leading to heedfulness from the moment we commence our retreat. Then to diligently maintain noble silence of mind and speech during the retreat duration. To cultivate sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose, domain of meditation, suitability, and non-delusion as a sign of our respect for the way place. The third purpose and intent is learn to be at ease. These are very important. Eh? Naturally relax and aware via heedfulness most of the time. Always move, speak, and act naturally. Naturally is very important. Just do things naturally, but with awareness. Awareness within. You are mindful. You are aware. And act naturally, but with inner awareness throughout the day to stabilize your five spiritual faculty until they become very stable and unshakable. With the stable daily mindfulness or awareness, use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. We are constant creative contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into the Four Noble Truths, leading to the perfection of all the Noble Eightfold Path factors of right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right living, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi, so that you are incapable of any evil whenever you are heedful. To maintain this heedfulness or appamada training throughout the day so that the cultivator can have the condition to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature and to awaken or realize the insight knowledges and wisdom needed to liberate your mind, leading to the realization of Nibbana or the cessation of form and mind as taught by the Buddha. Then the fifth important point is to diligently develop the understanding of the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. The important essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha are the five mental hindrances or pancha nivaranas, the five spiritual faculty or five pancha indriyas, the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, the three right views of kama niyama, citta niyama and dhamma niyama, then the dwelling, the paticca samuppada, the four noble truths, the three turnings of the four noble truths, the four foundations of mindfulness, and the seven factors of enlightenment, or satta bhujanga, then dana, sila, and bhavana, and finally the five daily contemplation. So if you want to really know the detail, you can look at that whiteboard over there, the green whiteboard. Never mind. They used to say, if we cannot move the mic, we move the whiteboard. So this one is the full essential Dhamma. Yeah, okay. And the recorder also must bring along. Yeah, it's okay. No, it's okay. Yeah, enough, long enough already. Yeah. No, the mic. That one is the magnify the sound. Okay, thank you. So you all can hear the back also, is that? Otherwise, at the back too soft. We had this problem earlier on. So last time, I think last year was the biggest group. There were about 60 of us. And this year, because of a few things, I think also the condition. You know, many of them went for India trip and they were not fit. Then the bus problem also. Then also school holiday haven't started until next week. There are some other conditions, but don't worry, all meant to be. In fact, the smaller group, easier for you all to learn. You don't have so much distraction. Then I can introduce you all very fast. Afterwards, I will do that. So the essential Dhamma that I highlighted just now, they are all here. So if you want to know what is Dhammapada, verse 21, 22, 23, and verse 183, they are all here. So I will quickly read through. Dhammapada, verse 183, is the famous advice of all Sammasambuddha. In Pali, is Sabba Papasa Akaranang. Kusalesa upasampadan secitta pariyuttapanang etang buddhana sasana. Sabbe is all, papasa is evil, akaranang, all evil, you must avoid. So this Dhammapada verse 183 is very important, because this is the advice of all Buddha. If you follow this, you will have good life. You will have the beautiful life. Because this can help you understand life and change your life completely, transform your life for the better. The first advice, they come from the first right view that the Buddha taught. Right view regards the law of karma. Because of this law of karma, the Buddha said, every day we have to reflect and contemplate the five daily contemplation, the last one. The Buddha said you have to reflect. Each and every one of us, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if you look at our entire life, is almost 100% decided by karma. So what must we do? We have to take care of karma. And how do we take care of karma? we have to avoid all evil. That's why the first advice of the Buddha is all evil are to be avoided. Not just avoid evil, all. It's for your own good. Otherwise, you will get into trouble karmically. Because the Buddha said the law of karma is very powerful. You reap what you sow. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. If you plant the seed of evil, you will reap the fruit of evil. If you plant the seed of wholesomeness, goodness, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness and goodness. So if you want to have the good life, you will have to have goodness, virtue, kindness, and all those things. If you are good to people, kind to people, people will be good to you and kind to you. And this is what the nature's law is. So avoiding all evil is most important. Then after that, the Buddha said, in order to build up your karmic nature, you have to cultivate whatever wholesomeness or goodness whenever there is condition. Yeah. When there is condition to do, you have the means. The advice is you do to develop the wholesomeness. Then the final one is, despite all the good karma, he who don't do the final advice, you can still be afflicted. You can still have suffering in life. Because these are wisdom that you need to develop. Without wisdom, despite your wealth, you still will have problem in life. Because according to the Buddha, under the first noble truth, he said there are 8 types of life reality that living being has to confront when they arise. So when you confront them without the wisdom and the understanding, you will suffer, you will be afflicted. So the 8 types are very simple, we have gone through. The first 4 relate to our physical body and our form and mind. Birth, old age, sickness and death. If you confront them without understanding, you will suffer. Because you deludedly grasp, cling and attach, thinking that this is you. That's why you will worry about them getting old, getting sick and die. Then after that is the 5th reality, separation. Separation from your loved ones, from the things that you hold on to dearly, from your wealth, your property, your possession, your even reputation, your title and all those things. Yeah. And separation can happen in many ways. The obvious one is death. Death can happen in so many ways. Not necessarily natural death, accident, calamity, nature's disaster like tsunami, earthquake, war, riots and all those things. So nowadays you can witness a lot of this, like the plane accident. We had the second Boeing that went down, the Ethiopian airline. Earlier on last year was just the Indonesian Lion Air. So now they had to ground all the plane. Then there are other things too, like the Japan last time, the tsunami, the Asian tsunami too, that time, 2004, I remember. That was the year I just came out to share. It was 15 years ago. And the first topic they chose was tsunami. And they asked me to explain through the Dhamma. So that time, it was quite interesting actually. So that last part that you need to develop is the Buddha said, you have to meditate, you have to purify your mind, develop the wisdom, the understanding, the awakening, so that you understand clearly without delusion that this physical body and mind of your so-called human being is not really what you think you are. For the Buddha said, this is just the 5 aggregate of form and mind, and they are impermanent. They lead to suffering if you attach and cling to it deludedly. And they are empty, non-self, not real, not a permanent unchanging entity. So once you understand all this, your mind will not be deceived, will not be deluded by the phenomenal world. the phenomenal world of consciousness, the illusion created by mind. So all this was this. That's why these three advice is very important. And how to develop all this, you need to have heedfulness, the Buddha said. So the Appamada Vaga under the Dhammapada verse, there are 20 verses in the Dhammapada which states all the verses on heedfulness. Appamada is heedfulness. They are verse 21 until verse 40. And I found the first three verses, 21, 22, 23, most important. That's why the first day I come out to share, I reminded Buddhist practitioner, cultivator, the importance of understanding these three. Because this is what the Buddha spoke. And through this, the Buddha said, you are guaranteed enlightenment. Verse 21, he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. So this is very obvious. Without heedfulness, you don't stand a chance. You may ask me, but still, I'm still alive, but I'm not heedful. Why do you say I'm as if dead? Here, dead means spiritually you are dead. You don't stand a chance. As far as spiritual enlightenment is concerned, you are heedless, you don't stand a chance. There is no awakening for you. That's why you are as if dead. But you may be alive physically. It's just like we say, human beings are conscious of life, but they are not aware. They are not mindful of the moment. They never really live life. They existed through life. So the difference between living life with heedfulness and existing through life with heedlessness is very important. You must see the difference. So without heedfulness, you are as if dead. Straight away, you must know what the meaning is. The meaning is, the Buddha said, you have to cultivate heedfulness. That's why the whole of our meditative training is to develop this heedfulness. Without this, you cannot start. Without this, you cannot develop the awakening. Then after that, Dhammapada was needed to re-emphasize and confirm to you why you need to be heedful. He said, the wise, distinctly understanding this different, the wise intend on heedfulness. The wise one, they will intend on heedfulness. They will never allow themselves to be heedless. And what will happen to them if they intend on heedfulness? They will rejoice in the realm of the Aryas. Aryas are enlightened beings. So Aryas are the enlightened ones. Means they are with the company of the Arya. Means they are going to become enlightened too. That's why heedfulness is very important. And verse 23 confirms 100%. The moment you are heedful, you will realize Nibbana, the supreme, born-free Nibbana. So under Dhammapada verse 23, the Buddha defined what heedfulness is. He said, the constantly meditative, the ever-mindful, and the steadfast one, means you hold on to these two practices, you will realize the born-free Nibbana. That's why heedfulness is very important. And heedfulness is defined by the first two. The constantly meditative means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. We are under the fourth Noble Truth. The Buddha said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. It will lead to enlightenment in the here and the now. Why do we meditate? To develop the enlightenment, the wisdom, to be free from all suffering. And you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead you to the realization of Nibbana. That's why this constantly meditative is very important. Then the next one is ever mindful. Means you're not only mindful, you have to be ever mindful throughout the day. to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path as taught by the Buddha, or constantly meditative. That if you hold on to these two practices, you will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana. And this one is guaranteed by the Buddha. That's why from here, you will understand why you need to develop heedfulness. And to be heedful, there are two paths. First, cultivate, stabilize the mindfulness until it becomes ever mindful. Until you are able to have this daily mindfulness, stability of daily mindfulness, even in the midst of living life. In the midst of life, existence, when you go about living your life, your work, your career, doing your duty as a householder or whatever. Yeah. So these three is most important. Yeah. Then when you are ever mindful, you use it to reflect, contemplate and meditate. Means cultivate Noble Eightfold Path factor. All the eight path factor, you have to understand them, cultivate them and perfect them. Then only you can realize the enlightenment. Then the others are very simple. The five spiritual faculties, Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, we have gone through. They are in Pali. Then the English translation, Saddha is faith, confident in the Buddha and his teaching. Virya is spiritual zeal. When you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, it will motivate you to practice, to cultivate, and it will give rise to this virya, which is a type of spiritual tenacity or zeal, a type of energy inside that drives you to cultivate, where you see the importance of cultivating this teaching. You come to realize who the Buddha is, how wise he is, and how special a being he is. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. That's why he is different. And his teaching can awaken living being, can make you enlightened, free your mind from suffering, allow you to understand life deeply, beautifully. And with that understanding, you will know how to live life. That's why you will have the good life. You can get to live the noble life of an enlightened being. Then you can live life to the fullest. You can experience life to the fullest. Then you can realize the pristine beauty and wonders of life. And everything becomes so pristine, so beautiful, so wonderful. You got no more problem with life. Everything is just wonderful. Simply just beautiful. Your heart is always filled with calmness, peacefulness, joy, understanding, wisdom, virtue. Wholesomeness. There is no negativity, no delusion, nothing. That is what the meditation is all about. It can give rise to such understanding. So this spiritual faculty, once it's developed, it will drive you to cultivate, to develop mindfulness, the third spiritual faculty, sati. Then when you are mindful, you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is not concentration. Samadhi is the collected mind, unwavering mind, the very stable mind, but it's a free mind. That is samadhi. Yeah. Then when there is wisdom, the last spiritual faculty, the last factor of enlightenment, upeka, equanimity will arise. Yeah. Then when there is sati and samadhi, you can see things as they are. Well, your mind is collected and unwavering. It will not stir. Not like normal heedless people who don't have the spiritual faculty. When they see something, their mind will stir. They will react. Stir because of their delusion. Yeah. When they don't have the understanding, the wisdom, they will act according to memory, according to their views, opinion, conditioning, their like and dislike. That's why they stir their mind. Then they cannot see things as they are, the reality. Like the Buddha said, jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality, the truth. Seeing things as they are, not according to what your brain, your memory tell you, your conditioning tell you. All those are wrong view, knowledge. They are not wisdom. Wisdom is not in the brain. Wisdom is in the awakened nature. That is where the difference is. Okay, then the five opposite mental hindrance. The Buddha said the reason why you have this mental hindrance are hindrance that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness, from becoming heedful. It's because you lack the opposite five, which is the spiritual faculty. So when the spiritual faculty are not there, the mental hindrance will be there. That's why most people cannot meditate because they don't have the spiritual faculty. So this mental hindrance, when they come, they don't know how to deal with it. They go and fight it, suppress it, control it, and they develop aversion towards it. That's where they went wrong. That's where the whole teaching become not effective. It doesn't have the potency to awaken living being anymore. In fact, these mental hindrances are very important negative mind state. The Buddha said when they arise under Dhamma Nupassana, the first category of cultivation, you have to develop mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. And this mental hindrance can help you develop wisdom. Well, when you know that they are there, it means your spiritual faculty are not strong. That's why you cannot deal with them. So to deal with them, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to fear them. You don't have to fight them, suppress them, control them. No. Just allow it to flower. When you allow it, it loses its power. Because according to the Buddha, this is not real. This is not you. The mental hindrances are dependent originating or condition arising mind states. Take for example, your restlessness of mind, your doubt, your sensual desire, your ill will, your sloth and torpor. These are not intrinsic in your mind state. Before they arise, they are not there. But they arise because you lack the five spiritual faculty. So when you realize this is happening, the Buddha says, you have to arise the right effort to actually abandon this wrong thought or negativity or mind state. How do you abandon them? There are five ways we will go through later. First is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Second is to think of the consequence of holding on to that wrong thought which will make you evil and bring about karmic downfall. Third is meditative, third and fourth. The third one, the Buddha says, just silence your mind aware. When you do that, all this mental hindrance cease to be. That's why in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Dhammanupassana, first category of cultivation, he said, when there is this sensual desire or ill will or any of the mental hindrance, when they are there, you must develop mindfulness, you must be aware. Then when you just aware, silence your mind, which is the meditative third way, then you realize it will cease to be. Because these are conditioned arising mind state. When you don't give it any more delusion to think and to continue to manifest, it will cease. That's why anger come and go. Sensual desire come and go. Restlessness of mind come and go. And the moment it ceases, your mind returns to its original state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. Then you realize you don't have to do anything to develop the ability to be mindful, aware. Then through that understanding, you will come to know how the arisen mental hindrance ceases to be. That is wisdom. That is understanding. Then the fourth way is to trace the origination factor, the Buddha said. How did this mental hindrance arise? Before that, there was none. So take for example the first two, sensual desire, ill will. Throughout the day when you live your life, what do? You have to see things, isn't it? Through your seeing consciousness. You have to listen through your hearing consciousness. Smell, taste, tactile and thought process. The sixth sense door. And most of the time, what do? When you see something, like and dislike, isn't it? Pleasant and unpleasant, isn't it? You hear something also same. Either you attach or you reject. So sensual desire and ill will is basically your like and dislike. your pleasant and your unpleasant sense experience. And these are the subdivision of your first two evil roots of greed and hatred. And because they are there, they create mental hindrance. So if throughout the day when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel or think or something, you also react and stir your mind to arise the mental hindrance of sensual desire, you will, then what happened to you? It will become habitual, isn't it? Because you do it so often. So the habitual tendency will make you heedless the whole day. Then how can you meditate? Because it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot be mindful. You cannot be heedful. You cannot be in the meditative state. That's how the mental hindrance do it. Then you realize every time this arrives because of the senses. It comes through one of your sense doors. Then why did you react? You have to reflect. You have to contemplate. You have to inquire. Then you will trace origin effect because of your wrong view. Because of your conditioning, your views, your opinion, your religious belief system, your like and dislike, your habitual. So this conditioning make you react, born of wrong view, wrong thought. So how to reverse it? You have to learn to see things as they are and accept them for what they are, then be at peace so that you don't have to stir your mind. Just like what I share with you all, the world is the world. People is just the way they are. And like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. If condition is like that, things will be like that. It cannot be otherwise. Why do you want to argue with nature? Why do you argue with the reality of the moment? The reality of moment is set into place by condition that arise at that time. So when condition is like that, things will be like that. It has to be like that. If you cannot accept, means you don't have wisdom. That's why you react and you stir. Why? You want things your way, which is not nature's way. That's why you suffer. When you cannot get what you want, you suffer. So this is basically what wisdom is all about. If it's due to my wrong view, I stir, then I ask myself, how can I have the right view not to stir? Then what did the Buddha teach? I have to learn to see things as they are. Means I have to accept the moment, the reality of the moment. Don't react, don't stir, don't blame. At peace. Doesn't mean you agree with what happened. No. But at least when you don't react, stir, project your thought, there is no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no like, no dislike. That's why your mind can be at peace. Without the mental hindrance, the spiritual faculty, sati, take over. That's how you become aware, silent, and mental hindrances. That's how you meditate. Without sati, without mindfulness, it will never cease. So this is how you develop wisdom. Trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse it through an understanding. We are accepting things as they are. Seeing things as they are with wisdom. Okay? Then Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 also very important. Verse 1 and verse 2 talk about the mind. The Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. If your mind is the forerunner of all things, then you have to take care of mind. So the Buddha said, verse 1 tell you, if you are heedless, you don't take care of mind, suffering will follow you. Just like what this Dhammapada verse say. So if you speak, act, and think with a wicked mind or an unwholesome mind that has the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then suffering will follow you like the wheel that follow the hoof of the ox. So this is very clear. If you are heedless, you will act, speak, and think with the three evil roots, because you don't have mindfulness. You don't have the right understanding. Then if you have the mindfulness, the right understanding, verse 2 is the complementary verse. He said, if you understand that mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief, and everything arises when the mind arises. So if one speaks, act and think with a wholesome mind, pure mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So to live life is very simple. If you want to have happiness, no more suffering, then be heedful. Act, speak and think with a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots. Then you will have the good life. And this is what the advice of the Buddha is all about. Avoid all evil, do good. Purify the mind. Then, the last advice of the Buddha, apamadena sampadeta, before his parinibbana, is strive on with heedfulness. He never asks you to do anything else. The moment you heed the heedfulness, you are guaranteed enlightenment. That's why he says, just do one thing, strive on with heedfulness. That's it, finish. Actually, the whole of meditation is just to develop heedfulness. The moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. So is it so difficult? It's not difficult. To be heedful, you only have to develop two things. Train your mind to be mindful, ever mindful, stabilize it, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Finish. That's it. Yeah. Then always remember, wisdom can only come from the direct seeing via the silent mind in pure awareness, not through your thought, not through knowledge, thinking. No. The mind has to be completely silent and it will just awaken. It will just understand. Yeah. Then here, the Noble Eightfold Path, they are all listed here. Samaditi, Sama Sankappa, Sama Vacha, Sama Kamanta. Then Sama Avijja. Then this right effort is Sama Vayama. This one is not Virya. This is right effort. The real effort is Vayama. Then Samasati is right mindfulness. Then Sama Samadhi is right Samadhi. Then you have the seven factors of enlightenment. Sati, Dhamma Vichaya, Virya, Piti, Sukha, Pasati, Samadhi, and Upeka. So they are the seven factors. Then the 37 factors, they are an extension of it, more elaborate. Then the 10 factors that bind living being to this samsara, they are all here. Self-delusion, Sakkaya-ditti, or the second one is doubt. Then attachment to rite and ritual. Then sensual desire, ill will, craving to form jhana, then craving to the formless jhana, then minor conceit, then restlessness of mind and ignorance. Then the Avijja Sutta, you have to go through it. We will also go through it. Then you have the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, the three phases of Dhamma, the three types of corresponding wisdom that will come with it. This one is behind your Heart Sutta book, under the appendix. I think the last few appendix. Folded, 2 pages. Then this one is the 31 plane of existence. So the 31 plane of existence, together with the explanation of the sensual world and all those things. So all these are also in our Heart Sutta book. You go through it, you will find them. Then the 10 Dhamma rhyme is also in the Heart Sutta book. So this will cover all the essential Dhamma, except the 4 support for awareness-based meditation. Ours is not using thought, focusing and concentrating, awareness, sati, mindfulness. So you need to have different support. First is to relax into every mind state that arises. Then maintain awareness. Just aware. Like the third way that the Buddha teach. Aware. Then you will develop the understanding. Then after that, stabilize it for as long as you can. If possible, 24 hours. Even during your sleeping moment. It can be done. Because it has been done before. Then the last one, you don't do until later. Trust. Trust your nature to develop the meditation, means the thought doesn't come in to interfere. When you reach that nature, your true mind, when you have realized your true nature, the meditation becomes different. There is no thought involved at all. It is just the silent mind that is aware, silent, not doing anything. The thought doesn't come in. No interference from the thought. So you just trust your nature to do. And at that time, the movement is internal. It will activate everything. It will do what it has to do. The nature will do. Yeah. That type of meditation is more difficult. Later only, most of you will do. Only those who have developed the ability to realize your true mind, your true nature. That type of meditation is applicable. Otherwise, it's not applicable. Okay. So, I have covered most of the thing, except two more. That one is number 5. Oh, almost 3:30 already. Wait. We check the program next page. Yeah, 2:15 to 3:30. Okay, just nice. I'm supposed to finish that part. Opening puja, followed by briefing and meditation instruction. So this one I have done. The briefing will be very comprehensive, and it will include retreat objective, instruction on how to develop the 5 spiritual faculty, and how to develop leading to appamada or heedfulness to arise the wisdom needed to counter the 5 mental hindrance. All I have done. Then meditation instruction will include the detailed explanation of what meditation is. This one I haven't covered. And how to develop the second turning, Dhamma contemplative or contemplation wisdom, so that meditation can be done with understanding. This one I will deal with it later. Cultivation to include establishment of a proper daily religious routine, leading to sustained period of continuous heedfulness. This is a must to develop good progress. This is daily mindfulness. So I will make use of the last few minutes to finish off 6 and 7, the objective, the main intent and purpose. So number 6, to silence our mundane mind, to realize the true mind, so that we are constantly aware within. To stabilize the silent meditative mind until the mundane mind, until the enlightenment factor of paucity, which is the tranquility of mind, arises. Then to establish a very good daily religious routine. For the cultivator to develop a very stable daily mindfulness when they revert back to their normal day, to the cultivation after the 9-day retreat. So after this retreat, if your stability of daily mindfulness has been established, you should try to retain them when you go back to your daily life. And the best way to do it is to have a religious routine. A routine means throughout the day, these are the few things you will do. So what I did was, during the early days, I established them myself. I heard from one teacher, Acharyantra, he always say you must have a good religious routine. Then I reflect, contemplate. Then I came to know that that was exactly what I was doing. By that time, my faith was very strong. Every day, without fail, every time I enter my house, I will pay respect to the altar. Every day before I leave my house, I will pay respect. And every day before I sleep, I will meditate. I will silence my mind. Then when I wake up, the first thing, I pay respect, triple jam. Then I meditate. Then I do all the religious routine. Share merit, transfer merit, really. Then sometimes I go to office, I meditate. Before I start, I go there early. Then after that, I maintain daily mindfulness. That's why that type of routine was with me. And I have to have it throughout the day. That's how during that 3 years, my nature transformed, progressed very fast. 1986 to 1989. Non-stop. that 3 years I was cultivating. I was still working that time. I have a family, I got my children and all. But I was full-time cultivating, developing heedfulness. And that is how progress can come by. Without that, it's almost impossible. Okay, the next one is just to bring along the following book, Heart Sutta book. After this, I will start. Then chanting book, the normal and retreat version, which I given you all. Then cultivating the Bodhisattva way, which is the blue book. Then the retreat program. Then I have included some new books. So this one is the latest, Understanding the Mind, the Heart and the Mind. This is very useful. So that you understand what is mind. Mind got two types. And what is heart, where the conscience is. Then also there is the other purple book. We call it the Five Aggregate of Form and Mind. So this Five Aggregate of Form and Mind is also very important. The Five Aggregate of Form and Mind. This one was based on a talk I gave in the year 2005. It was transcribed, but never printed into a book until lately. Last time it was just an A4 photostat paper, just clipped together. But now it's in a proper booklet form. So this version, this one is still the first edition version. I think there's another one coming out soon. Oh, we are not printing it. We only put it in. You want to know the first edition where we improve the flow of language. That one is in the website. You go to the website. The edition that follow this. It just went into the website, I think, last month or what. You want to have a better flow of English, you go and read that one. But this one also not bad. You can understand how I share my colloquial way, then you will find it interesting because it's expressed in the colloquial way. But I heard there are some feedback. They say some people are very, very particular about language. When they read your book, if they find all your language written is so colloquial and they are not Malaysian, they don't like to read your book. What type of book? English also, no? Like that one. Not proper Kuailo English. So, to cater for those groups, that's why I agree to allow them to do the improvement of the language. But most important is the content must not deviate. The content must still be there. That's why sometimes I still retain some of the colloquial expression because the meaning will run if you change them. So this is just extra information for you all. Then the rest is some earlier transcript book that has been printed. If you have not had a copy, especially those from outstation and not local, or first time joining this retreat, you will find them very useful. They are all at the back there. You can collect them. They are for free distribution. Donated by our Kayanamita through our Kayanamita Fund. Then just now, the morning puja also, together with whatever we do under this retreat condition, all of the funds are from our retreat common pool fund. And we use the common pool fund to fund all our activity, so that everybody get to partake in the wholesomeness that we do for the whole retreat. Even those who didn't join us. Because our Kayanamita fund, we had separate. We donate to the common pool fund. If I'm not mistaken, if I'm not wrong, I think it's about 4,000 this year we donated, which is quite substantial because we intend to make more offering to the temple. Okay, with this, maybe you can have your break. The break is for your meditation, if I'm not wrong. You look at the program. So the earlier program we have finished. Then 2:15 to 2:30 is what we are doing, yeah, just now. So we just finish. Yeah. So 3:30 to 4:30, you're supposed to have 45 minutes of formal sitting and lying down meditation, and 15 minutes of daily mindfulness training. We are bowing, Dhamma contemplation, reflection, and inquiry within the vicinity of the temple while in walking, standing, and sitting posture to maintain continuous mindfulness with awareness within at all times. So maybe I will make use of the first 15 minutes to share with you on how to develop the meditation. Okay, for those who are new especially, always remember all the method and technique that you all learn or object of meditation that people teach you to use to develop the meditation, they are just skillful means to anchor the mind so that this mind does not run, and they are not the real meditation. They are just skillful means to anchor the mind so that the mind is not heedlessly lost in thought. Then what happens is a lot of this method, technique, and object of meditation, the instruction that is given to you, they are just a series of instructions to do certain things. If you don't understand what you are doing, you will become gullible. And you just do all those things thinking that that is meditation. But you never ask, what is meditation? And what actually the Buddha teach to develop the meditation? The Buddha teach a lot of essential Dhamma. But when it comes to meditation, the Buddha is very, very focused. What did the Buddha teach you? To establish? Just one word. What is it? Huh? Just now I went through with you. Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23. What is that word? Ah, heedfulness. So he say you need only this word, heedfulness. So you never inquire, what are you doing or in the name of meditation? Are they asking you to train yourself in heedfulness? If they don't teach you to develop heedfulness, forget about it. Because this is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Especially those method and technique that teach you how to focus, concentrate, and do all the jhana and other things. Not to say it's good or bad. Nothing to do with good or bad. But if it doesn't lead to heedfulness, it's not the advice of the Buddha. It's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And to be heedful... Oh, sorry. Yeah. Heedfulness. And to be heedful, there are two parts. So, to be heedful, you have to be first ever mindful. Plus, two, constantly meditative. So this is the most important. Heedfulness, there are two parts to it. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. So mindfulness is most important. If you are not mindful, you cannot be ever mindful. True or not? So first, train your mind to be aware, mindful. So this mindfulness is awareness. Awareness. So awareness or mindfulness. So this English word sometimes is very dangerous. Mindfulness. means there are two parts in it. Mind in fullness. Correct or not? Mind in fullness. Correct or not? So if your mind is full of thought, is that mindfulness? That is not mindfulness. Right? So mind in fullness means it's fully aware without thought. That is mindfulness. The mind that is fully aware, that is mindfulness. So mindfulness is mind that is fully aware. Or in sati. This is mindfulness. And what is sati? Sati is just awareness before the knowing. And sati is equal to awareness before the knowing. That's why you can develop the direct seeing. If you are not aware, if you don't have sati, you cannot see things as they are. Like I explained to some of you down there just now. Yeah? When you have the direct seeing, when you see something, let's say that poster at the back there, to see things as they are means you must be aware of it like a baby, but don't have any words or concept or idea to describe what that thing is. Because the moment you describe, you don't see anymore. Because that word, that concept, create the attachment to what your thought tell you. Let's say this microphone that I spoke on. You try to see this microphone. Do you think you really see? Because the thought will straight away tell you what is this. Microphone, isn't it? So the word is more important than this, isn't it? Where you are not seeing what is all this without words. Means when you are just aware before you label it, the knowing is the perception. When you perceive it, microphone come out. This is no more direct seeing. This is the thought telling you it's a microphone. But when I see this whole thing, there is no word. That's why I can see thing as they are, that reality. No word, no description. That is how awareness see. That is how awareness understand. And when you see things as they are, everyone that see has the same seeing. No different. But when you use thought and concept, you will see it according to your views, opinion, and your conditioning. Do you understand? And you see the concept. You only know the word, microphone. You never see all this. That's why you don't have any understanding of the detail of this. But if I see this as it is, I see the detail without the words. Then I can recollect what I see. Otherwise, I ask you, that microphone, what color? You cannot remember. How does it look like? Sometimes you find it very difficult to draw it out also. Understand? Until you see again, oh, then you realize, wow, you miss so many things. So the direct seeing is so different. So awareness, sati, is awareness before the knowing. The knowing is the perception, really. So this one, the concept and the word come out, really. The knowing is the perception. So when you perceive something, means the words and concept come out already. That's why your mundane mind is very fast, very active. It straight away creates the words and the concept, and you are not dealing with reality anymore. The knowledge comes in. That's why you can never see things as they are. So,
Whatever method and technique, you ask yourself that question, why am I doing it? Does it teach me to be mindful? Then I can stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then I'm on the right track. Then after that, I use it to meditate. Constantly meditative means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. So once you understand this, you know what heedfulness is, you will know how to meditate. Then it becomes very easy. So we take for example, the first thing that the Buddha teach the monk is what? Anapanasati, isn't it? So Anapanasati, did the Buddha say focus on the breath? Did the Buddha say focus on the breath? He never say that, isn't it? He said develop mindfulness on the in and out breath, isn't it? Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So mindfulness on the in and out breath. Then why did people say focus on the tip of the nostril? Focus on the feeling, trying to do so many things. Anapanasati is just mindfulness of the in and out breath. When you are mindful of your in and out breath, do you have thought? You don't have thought, isn't it? But when you cannot be mindful of your in and out breath, you will have thought, isn't it? True or not? So, according to the Buddha, our mind is very simple. You are either lost in thought or you are aware. Because you can only do one thing at a time. You agree or not? Either you are thinking, preoccupied with the thought process, that's why you are lost in thought, you are heedless. Or you are aware, fully aware of the moment. When you are aware, before the knowing, how can you think? You can't think, isn't it? There is no concept, no word, isn't it? That's why you must understand. You are either aware in sati, or you are lost in thought. Imply heedless. Means you are not mindful. You are not with the moment. That's why you are heedless. When you are heedless, how can you meditate? You have to meditate with your true mind. And there are two types of mind. Mind. Two types. And what are they? By now you should know that. The first one is, you always use one. What type of mind is that? Your thinking mind, right? You think a lot, right? So the first type is, equals your thinking mind. And people also call this the mundane mind, thinking or mundane mind. And the Buddha called this the condition arising mind. Arising mind. Or the dependent originating mind. So these are the various names given. And this one is basically your thought. Basically your thought. Dominated by thought. Then the second type is what? Second type is what type of mind? Your true mind. And what is this true mind? True mind is your silent mind. When there is no thought, when you are not thinking, this is your true mind. And this is also your true nature. But human beings seldom have a chance to be aware of this true mind. Why? Because you think a lot. You are a creature of thought. You are non-stop thinking. Sleep also dream and think. Then how can you be aware of your true mind? The true mind can only arrive when thought ceases. When you are completely without thought. Do you know that to be completely without thought, you have to be very aware? The awareness is before the knowing, isn't it? Before the arising of the thought, before the perception. The moment you perceive, you are not silent already. You understand? That's why the meditative mind is your true mind. And this is your meditative mind. And you have to meditate with sati. The mind that is in aware, that is just aware, meditative mind. And this is what meditation is all about. So what happened is, all these people who teach meditation, most of them doesn't have this understanding. And they know one thing, they think a lot. You agree or not? Because when you sit down, a lot of thought, isn't it? Restless, isn't it? And you cannot meditate yet. So what you do? They ask you to focus, isn't it? Concentrate, fix the mind, and they give you an object of meditation. A method and a technique. So that you focus, you concentrate, you fix it. So that you experience calmness. Ah, they say that is meditation. That is not meditation. That is the Hindu meditation, the 40 object of meditation leading to concentration. That's why the jhana got 5 jhanic factor. What are the 5 jhanic factor? Vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. What is vitaka? Apply thought. He said you apply your thought on the meditation. You note, apply the thought there. Then you focus. Then you sustain the thought there. When you do that, what happens? You go into concentration. You kill all the thought cannot move because you fixed it there. Then this piti will come. Your mind becomes calm, you experience calmness, you experience joy. But this is a conditioned state. Then when piti comes, you continue to do that, then it becomes more refined, you experience blissfulness of mind, sukhang. Then after that, they have to hold this mind, you know, because this mind is full of energy. You know. So what they use is one-pointedness, ekagata. They fix it. They kill all the thought until the thought cannot move. That's why they say, I got no thought. But who say you got no thought? Who tell you got no thought? It's the thought that tell you got no thought, isn't it? So no thought is still a thought, isn't it? Because the thought has been held in one-pointedness. That's why you do that, your mind is not free. You cannot develop the enlightenment. Because you cannot be in the state of heedfulness. You cannot be aware because it's such a concentrated state. And you know what the Buddha said? When you are in that jhanic state, your 5 mental hindrances are all suppressed. You understand? They are suppressed by the energy. They cannot surface. Means you cannot root it out. Then what happens is when they grow old or when they neglect their jhana concentration and training, then suddenly they lose their ability to enter jhana. Like what happened to Devadatta. And he lost his psychic ability, everything. You know what happened during that time? That time, the 5 mental hindrances start to surface again. Because it was not rooted out, understand? Then they realize they still can get angry. They can still have sensual desire. Their mind can still be restless. They can still have sloth and torpor. You have doubt. Well, they don't have the wisdom, the awakening. That's why jhana is suppression, control, not a free mind. You cannot awaken with that type of mind. That's why the Buddha, after he learned from Alara and Udaka, the first 2 teachers, he was expert in jhana. The 2 teachers put him as equal. No, he said, I'm not your teacher. You can sit side by side and teach. He said, no, I'm not looking for this. where he is searching for a type of enlightenment that can free his mind from birth, old age, sickness, and death. And this two janic thing, he realized, end of the day, he still need to die. But they believe after they die, they take birth in the formless rhyme. To them, they think this is highest. That's why they choose to have that type of view. So the Buddha left them and developed his own mindfulness training through anapanasati. Then he stabilized the mindfulness in daily life. Then when he did that, he was able to connect back his past cultivation and training. Then underneath the Bodhi tree, when the condition all fall into place, he realized Sama Sambuddhahood. Then he started to teach differently. That's why his teaching is all about sati. He never say concentration. The four foundations of mindfulness is all about mindfulness. The samadhi, he never says samajana, understand? He used a different word, samadhi. That's why it's different. And when you do that type of meditation that the Buddha teach, it's completely different. Your mind is still a free mind. The mental hindrances are not suppressed, but you can awaken and root it out, and you realize all these are not real. And there is vipassana, wisdom, understanding, awakening. So all of meditation, always remember, whatever method, technique you already have, you don't worry. You don't have to throw away. If you want to do it, you do it with understanding. You tell yourself, I am going to develop mindfulness, sati. Then just stabilize it. I don't want to focus, I don't want to concentrate. You want to experience that type of joy or that type of spiritual calmness for a while, you want to try it and experience, you go ahead. Then after that, you release the concentration out and maintain silent awareness. Go back to the four support and see what happened. What is the difference? There is a big difference. Because when you do that, you can realize the silent mind. This second type of mind is your meditative mind. If your mind cannot quiet down, silent, and become tranquil. We call it paucity enlightenment factor. The mind that is tranquil. Completely still. No movement, no thought. That is paucity. That is the enlightenment factor. That is your meditative mind. And when that one stabilizes, the mind enters sati. When the mind enters sati, everything you do, your seeing, your hearing, your smell, your taste, your tactile, consciousness, or your thought, they are all in sati. You become completely different. That's why when your mind enters sati, your daily mindfulness is like automatic. Everything you do, you are just aware. And throughout the day, you can be aware. That's it. Finish. That's why you become heedful. And you are destined for enlightenment. And it's not difficult. Can be done. Okay? So with this, I will stop. You will have about 40 minutes of meditation. Yeah? Then I will come back and ring the bell. Oh, you are left with 30 minutes only. Okay. So I will stop here. You will have 30 minutes of meditation. Maybe first day. Yeah? Some of you driving, tired. So 30 minutes is enough. Yeah? So if you want to go toilet break, you go. Then after that, you can have your whatever meditative training. Okay. Yeah, you can rejoice. Huh? Don't be shy. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.